Hello and welcome to PharmaLex Talks podcast. Today I'm speaking with Mohammed, or Mo, Assad about the unique considerations and nuances to the US FDA pre-submission process for medical devices and how these compare with Australia's TGA. Mo is Regional Sales Manager, Asia Pacific at PharmaLex, where he draws on his consulting and industry experience in Australia, the US and Singapore, and on his engineering analytical background to help startups and large companies alike bring new and novel technologies to market. Welcome, Mo, and thank you for taking the time to share your experience with the FDA's pre-submission pathways with our audience.
Thank you for the introduction, Kim.
Let's begin by looking at what the Q-submission process is, its purpose, and the different pathways offered by FDA.
So broadly speaking, the Q-submission program is really a way of communicating with the regulator to obtain their feedback on particular topics that are germane to both the manufacturer and the regulator. I should point out that this is entirely voluntary and at no cost to the manufacturer. What's great about the FDA is that they're very well established and their processes are quite streamlined. Being one of the largest regulatory agencies in the world, the FDA has resident seasoned experts who can utilize the QSUB pathway as an opportunity to really share knowledge and provide advisory. There are two main Q-submission pathways I'd like to shed some light on. The first is the pre-submission pathway, and the second is the submission issue request, or SIR. I'd like to clarify that there are other pathways within the Q-submission program, including one that's dedicated to study risk determination that's quite specific to clinical trials. As you can imagine, these are very narrow in scope, so we won't really be discussing these into a high level of detail today. But ultimately, the main point is that the Q-submission program gives organizations an opportunity to have the ear of the FDA.
Obviously, that's hugely beneficial to medical device manufacturers. Does the TGA offer anything similar?
Yes, generally speaking, they do. The TGA also have guidance documents and processes pertinent to consultation requests. Something to note is that both the TGA and the FDA will choose to meet either virtually via teleconference or physically, and that's really up to their discretion. Although I would say the consultation process is a little less formal when dealing with the TGA in comparison to the FDA. Another potential difference is that the TGA may also schedule a meeting with the Australian sponsor. And for context, the Australian sponsor is the local entity that's responsible and legally liable for the device in Australia and who's formally appointed by the manufacturer to do so. I'd like to emphasize that for novel or complex devices, pre-submission meetings with the TGA may be a great tool to facilitate a common understanding of the therapeutic good and for manufacturers to really map out the submission process.
Thank you, Mo. Let's go back to those FDA pathways that you mentioned earlier. Can you explain the difference between the pre-submission and the submission issue request, or SIR, pathways?
Pre-submission meetings are generally most valuable in the strategy definition phase or during the verification and validation and conceptualization stages. Essentially, this is prior to running the full suite of tests or clinical investigations. And really, generally speaking, we would recommend the pre-submission pathway to clients if there is ambiguity in the strategy or in their validation of the devices. The SIR pathway, on the other hand, is a request for feedback in relation to an undergoing regulatory submission.
That's a great explanation. Thanks, Mo. Could we perhaps have a look at that in action?
Thanks, Kim. Absolutely. So ultimately, once the manufacturer has demonstrated readiness and developed and submitted a submission package to attain market access for a device, The FDA may raise questions or concerns in the form of deficiencies or additional information requests. The SR pathway allows manufacturers to propose justifications or put forward protocols to the FDA to address these concerns that were raised initially. Again, this really may be the case for a novel device where standards do not exist or are insufficient. As part of the SR pathway, the FDA may in turn earmark the information presented by the manufacturer or propose completely new testing strategies based on their expertise. So in a nutshell, the manufacturer may use an SIR as an opportunity to conduct a feasibility study or to determine testing parameters or the sample size required and to justify performance characteristics of their device with the agency.
Perhaps now we can go back and revisit the TGA's pre-submission process and look at how that compares with the FDA's.
Yeah, so generally speaking, the TGA's process may be more discretionary. While we do recommend having these interactions with the TGA, we would usually reserve the process to more complex conformity assessments and where there is a clear need really to communicate with the regulator. With the TGA and where possible, we may advise clients to rely on overseas comparable evidence as an efficiency gain for market access. Or in the case of TGA direct conformity assessments, we would advise manufacturers to really build up their evidence internally first and gain a good level of understanding and confidence prior to really presenting that information in front of the TGA. Ultimately, the goal really is to present clear, concise, and accurate information to the regulator for their review. In contrast, the FDA's process is slightly more structured, and the agency will meet in person or more frequently now, really, via teleconference to provide their feedback. On receipt of a pre-submission package, the FDA will first conduct an administrative acceptance review. They would schedule a meeting within usually 70 days, that's what they aim for, and provide their best and current feedback within 3 to 4 months approximately. Remember, the Q submission program is established to de-risk the market access submission pathway. And where further clarification or confirmation is necessary, we may encourage clients to utilize the QSUB pathway.
Does the difference between the TGA's approach and the FDA's imply that more companies are inclined to go to the US market first?
That's a million-dollar question, Kim. There is no silver bullet to the US versus Australian medical device market access. So the short answer is not necessarily. But in saying that, the US is the biggest healthcare market in the world. Whilst Australia only accounts for about 2% or so of the global market. So as you can imagine, it's imperative for companies to include the US as a priority jurisdiction, especially when they're thinking about a global footprint and a global market access approach. So the Australian regulatory framework does allow for bridge assessments from overseas comparable regulators, including the US and Europe. Hence, the US first and Australia second is a possibility, and this may introduce efficiencies for some companies. However, this is dependent on the manufacturer's marketing plans and the subject device. So a device-specific regulatory strategy is really essential to determine the best pathway to the market globally and when we're thinking about the nuances between the global regulations.
Thank you for that, Mo. Could we perhaps look more deeply at the value of the QSUB to medical device companies?
Absolutely. So for early stage companies or those who are uncertain about the quickest pathway to market or their development activities even, the least risky path to the US market is really the QSUB pathway because it de-risks the process. As mentioned earlier, the regulators do not charge for the service and feedback can be obtained quite quickly, which makes this a really compelling option. So as a brief example, if you're talking about a new software as a medical device, so that's novel with no predicate devices, and therefore it will automatically be considered de novo under the FDA's path, under the FDA's regulatory framework, the ability to access the knowledge of FDA experts becomes invaluable at that instance. The point being, the software frameworks are uncertain and there are no predicates. So to the back of that, there might be particular areas of interest to the agency. And via the Q-submission pathway, the FDA may be able to shed some light on these in advance of an application.
You mentioned earlier that with the FDA demonstrating equivalence to a similar product or predicate is important with market access considerations. What does it actually mean for companies developing novel products when it comes to the Q-sub pathway?
Yeah, so in the absence of predicate devices and when a de novo is in place or in order, the device will, the manufacturer could really save hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in validation and verification, as well as testing and clinical trial costs by interacting with the regulator. So really, generally speaking, the extent of the evidence required to support a medical device submission is dependent on the risk classification and alignment with standards and the state of the art. For novel devices, there are no or very limited standards, and really best practices are still under development. The dilemma really is to quantify how much testing is enough. So it's important to get this right because it costs time and money. Importantly, via the QSub program, the manufacturer is able to identify requirements in collaboration with the regulator at an earlier stage. And this is really an opportunity to identify efficiency gains. For example, if additional testing may be required for a hardware medical device, one consideration may be to determine if fresh samples are required or if previously tested batches could be repurposed.
There are obviously many benefits to organizations with these pathways, but is the QSub pathway suitable for all medical device companies?
That's a great question, Kim. The QSub is a great tool to steer the ship, really, and answer what ifs and what maybes. From my experience, companies that can benefit the most from QSubs are those manufacturing novel complex devices or those that have particular concerns. So as a general rule of thumb, and for devices where the pathway to market is not clearly portrayed, or for devices that encompass new or novel technologies, a QSub is in order to ensure they're headed in the right direction and to jump through some of the regulatory hoops. It's possible to have tunnel vision whilst focusing on product development activities, and it's increasingly really important to stay in sync with the regulators. So pre-subs can prevent manufacturers from burning through their cash reserves and ensure they get the right strategy for market access. Our medical device experts can guide, advise, and support with these pathways.
Thank you for joining me today, Mo, and for sharing your knowledge about the value and importance of QSubs. Thank you also to our listeners. I hope you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another to your business. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can join us for future podcasts.